Check the mic and make sure it sound right, boys.
Welcome to Red Storm Chasers. I'm Vincent here with Craig and Nick. On this episode, we'll look back at the wins against Fordham and Quinnipiac to start the season. We'll have an interview with new St. John's Athletic Director, Ed Cull. And we'll look ahead to the games against Wagner and New Mexico. Craig and Nick, good to be on with you guys once again.
Great day. St. John's ranked 22 in the AP. What a day. What a time to be alive.
You took the words right out of my mouth. I was literally going to say, what a time to be alive.
What a start to the season so far. Two games in and we're already just first time ranked since 2019.
There's the national budget there for us, man. It's great.
Who would have thought?
Look at us. Me.
I mean, I did.
No, I did.
No,
I
did. We did.
I mean, we came in 27th.
We absolutely did. No, I was joking.
27th, if you will.
We had talked about it on Sunday night when we were together. We said, do you think we'll get ranked? And I said yes. I didn't think 22. I thought 25. I thought
we had the right 25. Formula of teams losing, too, which is always kind of key, particularly in the early part of the season.
This is the first real poll.
Yeah, you're right. Because the preseason poll is kind of based on other stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, and we did have a good combination of, you know, Texas A&M lost, UCLA lost, somebody else lost big that I was thinking of in the 20s. Anyway, Texas was like 19. They lost.
Yeah.
So like you had the right combination of teams lose. And because of that, you know, you're able to get in when you're that close. Four Big East teams ranked, by the way. Marquette, Creighton, UConn, us, and Xavier receiving votes. Actually, Providence also received three votes, I believe.
Okay.
So good. That would be good. If we could get five teams ranked heading into
five is a good sweet spot.
Big East play, that would be great. Listen, six would be icing.
I mean, six is better, but five would be great just because once you play ranked teams, if you have a bunch of ranked teams, when the season starts, it just
you a self-fulfilling kind of prophecy.
Ranked, exactly. Right? Because if you lose to a ranked team, like, yeah, it's not so bad. You beat a ranked team, it gives you opportunities.
Yeah.
It's how the Big 12 did it. They did it last year.
They always do it.
They game the system a little bit. Week non-conference stayed high ranking, and then by the time Big 12 play came around, it's all ranked games. So then everybody's net stays really high.
Yeah.
That's all you got to do.
That's, I mean, and that's how they ended up with 12. So many teams.
Yeah, and it worked out well. So
I do think Big East, obviously, in my opinion, the best conference in basketball. There is a drop-off after Providence this year, which we haven't seen as much in past years, in my opinion.
Not as big of the league, I guess you would say.
Well, no.
Because it's always at the bottom and been very stinky.
Well, I mean, DePaul has always been bad. DePaul will always be bad. And last year, Georgetown was terrible, right? But every other team last year was like, you know, these guys, Butler, they're not so bad. Whereas this year, Butler and Seton Hall are in that mix as well of teams who you're just like, eesh.
We'll see.
Seton Hall lost to Fordham, who they beat.
By 30.
We beat by 30. They lost on a buzzer beater.
They did.
At Walsh Gym.
Wusu, really. Did you watch it? Did you see it?
I saw that. I already saw
Wusu dropped the pet. They were up by one with the ball like 15 seconds to go. They broke the press. The guy at midcourt caught the ball, kicked it out to Wusu, who was by the 3-point line open. He was just trying to catch it. He wasn't trying to do anything with it. Off his hands, out of bounds. Fordham gets the ball back, and that's how they got a shot.
Tough one for Wusu there.
Tough one for our guy, for our old guy.
But yeah, I mean, so I do think there's a bit of a drop off after Providence. But again, if we can go into Big East play five teams ranked,
We're in great shape.
I mean, it hasn't been the best start for the Big East, to be honest. After we only got three teams in the tournament last year, you were hoping to come out with some big punches. Villanova loses to Columbia. They're another one who's kind of on the mediocre there, edging on the edge of bad.
Kyle Neptune's, he is mighty hot, I would imagine.
Oh, he's
scorching.
Better make the tournament,
because I don't think Villanova's going to let, I don't think he's going to last if they don't make the tournament.
You had Seton Hall lose to Fordham, and then obviously Butler dropped a game as well in the cupcake time, if you will. So it's
not great.
We'll see. I mean, we'll see. But four teams ranked right now, we're one of them. First time since 2019. Got to be excited about that.
Those are actually only three losses in the conference so far.
Yeah, I know.
Also, first time ranked this early before Thanksgiving since 2000.
Wow. 2000, good year.
Great year.
For the St. John's Red Storm.
It was. Last Big East title.
Well, hopefully it's a good sign of things to come. We'll see as the season plays out and this non-conference schedule lines up and heats up, to be honest. We'll get to that in a minute, though. We're going to start a new segment here on Red Storm Chasers, though, called the Starting Five. Today's Starting Five is going to be your five favorite players in St. John's history. Craig, we will start with you, and I know it's hard for you to follow rules here, kid.
It's real hard.
We're talking
this
about
very difficult.
Five players only, not six.
I had like 7 or 8. I really wanted
to talk about number five. Here. Okay. Hit number five and then end your conversation.
So I'm going to say, I'm going to do players that I've seen because it's hard for me to say that about players that I really.
Yeah. It would be hard to be your favorite player.
Hard to be favorite player.
Never seen them play. That's true.
So Marcus Hatton is probably number one for me. I mean, he was in like 2003 when I was like young. So it was key important time for me. D'Angelo Harrison was it one of my favorite players. It's the passion he had. He was all about St. John's. It was great. Ron Artest, because for many reasons, plus in post St. John's, Ron Artest is just spectacular. Great TV.
10 out of 10.
Just love him. Anthony Mason Jr. was big for me. That was right around when I was in college, and he was that guy for St. John's. At a time when we really weren't getting recruits, he came, which was big. I also did a little side work with him afterwards, helped him on a kickball tournament he did. So good guy. My last one is Paris Horn.
Because, oh, there you go. That's good. Good call.
That 2007 team, that redeemed team that really, that was an important team for me personally. He just had some crazy dunks when he was, you know, going through, and that team just built together, and Paris Horn was one of my guys. So I'm going to say Paris Horn, five.
Oh, good picks. Good picks. I like those. Paris Horn, he's a good name. You don't hear too much in St. John's kind of history, and he earns a shout out. All right, I'll go with mine next, Nick, if that's okay.
Yeah, you go.
All right. I usually go last. Craig, similar to you, Marcus Hatton on my list this year as well. Sure. We were, you know, that was kind of for me when St. John's became a thing for me. Became, you know, I was a young kid when he was in college. In the same vein, D'Angelo Harrison on my list as well, just because was phenomenal. He may have been the best player, not, you know, NBA-wise, whatever, but I saw a play probably. In terms of his skill, I mean, listen, he's the third all-time scorer at St. John's, right? So really probably the best any of us have seen play recently. But just his passion on that court was incredible. And in a big spot, you knew he would hit the shot.
Clutch. Very clutch, D'Angelo.
Similarly, Anthony Glover.
Glover, big guy for me.
He was great, you know, just always old reliable down there. And we struggled rebounding once he left.
Undersized. Oh, he was like a prototype. He was undersized, but he was a monster in there.
He was great. So he's on my list. Here's a good one. Sean Evans. Loved Sean Evans.
Sean Evans.
50% from the line always.
Love it.
You knew you were making 1-on-1. You knew you weren't getting 2. Love to see some Sean Evans. And my last favorite player, Christian Jones.
Oh, I knew it. I love Christian Jones. How much Vincent loved Christian Jones.
The potential Christian Jones had was you know, if he had played the potential he had in my eyes, he'd be in the NBA right now. Shout out to him. I don't know why. He was a great player. I
forgot how much you loved
him. I did. I loved Christian Jones. I wish he, you know, his career would have panned out a little better, but great for St. John's when we had him.
Absolutely.
So, Nick, who do you got?
So funny enough, I have a lot of the same people you guys have, actually.
Shocker. It's almost like we grew up in the same household.
Yeah, right? So I'll start it off with the people that I have similar to you guys. I have Anthony Mason Jr. because when I was, you know, I was a little bit younger than you guys, but really when I started playing like the college basketball video games, I forget what year it was.
Yeah. Right.
I think it was maybe like 08 or something like that, 2K8 or whatever. He was the guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
I was like, okay, I got to play as Anthony Mason. I also picked D'Angelo Harrison because right before I went into college is when when I was a freshman in college and I was a manager, he was a senior and that was that team.
Right, right.
So like the 3 years of my high school when I was really ramping up to like, you know, loving St. John's and going to St. John's, I watched him. And then once we got there, we were ranked. Then.
Right.
We were ranked as high as
16. That team, yeah.
And that was, you know, it was awesome. He's, you know, the energy, like you guys said, energy love. Can't say enough about it. The other person we have in common is Sean Evans. Because
he's
one of my favorite players.
Love
also
that,
because
Nick.
Mr. 50-50 all the time. He was always going to get. He's a career 500 free throw shooter.
Love that.
I looked at it, and so like
that's phenomenal. I would have told you that because we saw it play out.
We loved it every time. You know what you're getting. My one that you guys don't have, Malik Booth.
Malik.
He was, you know, number three.
I did like Malik Booth.
My favorite number, number three. And, you know, he was a point guard. He was short. I was short. You know,
undersized
point guard. But great, though.
But very good.
Very good point guard.
And part of that 2011 team, that graduating in 2011 team, which I liked a lot, too.
With that being said, my my final person on my top five has got to be Posh Alexander.
Oh, good.
I mean, I know it's very recent.
Very recent.
Yeah. And, you know, he left. He left. I think a little recency biased anti him there from me personally. Like, I didn't think about
it.
Not in bias. I loved him.
I mean, like, yeah, when he was here, he was, you know, he was a junkyard dog every second of the game. He was always giving 110%, flying all over the place.
He was.
And he was, you know, he was the glue we needed on a team when, you know, we weren't the best team in the country, right? Yeah. We had Mike Anderson, which was great, and it was a fun experiment. It didn't work, but Posh Alexander was a constant in that.
And
he beat
Villanova at Villanova because of Posh Alexander.
Exactly.
He's probably one of the best defenders I've ever seen, to be honest.
For sure.
Be completely honest. Yeah. I mean, Posh brought it every night. I mean, he really did. He could lock people down. Remember Colin Gillespie?
That's it. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, just think about it. Just that.
Owned him.
He did.
That's all I was sad.
I didn't really think about him. He's a little recent.
I was sad to see him go.
Yeah.
He's on Dayton right now.
You're right. I'm wrong.
They just won a big game. They got votes to be ranked, I should say.
They played Northwestern.
Northwestern, yeah. They have votes to be ranked. Good for him.
Good for Posh.
Dayton, by the way, great city for a college basketball game. If you ever want to go to a Dayton basketball game, I'd highly recommend it. The Hangar out there is where they play the first four every year. Hmm. Really, really cool arena. Anyway, side note. I think there's a few people we probably missed in the top five favorites. Shamari Pons probably deserved a little shout-out,
too. Yeah, Shamari Pons, I'm surprised he wasn't anyways.
He carried the team for a while.
He did. I mean, he was electric.
Eugene Lawrence.
Oh, yeah.
A big Eugene. He almost made my list, but I...
Amar Alibegovic for me, the only guy from when I was a freshman to a senior.
That's right.
Give a little shout-out.
Justin Burrell was a big guy for me, too. I very heavily thought about Justin Burrell.
Yeah.
Close. All right, that's our top five. Our starting five, top five players all time at St. John's for us. All right, moving ahead, we obviously great first week of St. John's basketball.
Couldn't ask for much better.
Being ranked 22 in the country. Start of the year off, obviously, a great win, 92-60 against Fordham. We were dominant. I mean, we shot 54% from the field. We out-rebounded Fordham. We were just better than them. And we talked about that in the pod, that this was an easy game. And in the interview we have with Ed Cull, he talked about how he actually set this game up from the other side.
Right.
And they were thinking, hey, maybe we could get them early before they're a connected team. And clearly that was not the case.
That did not work out for them. Worked out for Ed Cull, but it didn't work out for
that's them. Right.
You're right. But yeah, I mean, we really came out dominant. We looked really good on the defensive end. I think we looked really connected. Aaron Scott looked like a really important part of this team. His defense, his three-point shooting, I thought he looked really good. I was very impressed by him.
Yeah, we really, at the beginning, we struggled offensively a little bit. We looked a little disconnected, but very quickly we came together. And like you said, from wire to wire, our defense was spectacular.
The defense was the big thing for me. I mean, the offense looked great, obviously.
We had four players in double digits. We had 11 players score. So our offense was pretty good.
Pretty good.
We did struggle in the first half, though. Nick, you're correct on that one. But the defense was...
We
held them to 36% from the field.
Yeah.
Right? And 34% from three. That's a good day. You hold any team to 36% from the field, it's unlikely they're going to come away with a win.
Absolutely.
We shot 34% from three, for those keeping track. We were 9 of 26. Decent day. The only starter not to score double digits was Zuby. He had 6 points. And Zuby didn't have the best game.
Out of everybody on the team, he's the only one who really didn't shine.
Zuby did not have a great week.
But he didn't have a great week.
That's fair. And you know what? We still won by 20 points and two 20-point-plus wins.
I agree, and I think Zuby's going to be fine. I do. We saw him do it last year. I think he's had a tough two-game stretch. I don't have a lot of worry about him. I think he'll be fine.
Yeah, no, I agree. There's a reason you play the cupcake games at the beginning. Sure. You know who did have a good week, though, is Brady Dunlap. 9 points for him in this game against Fordham. Really turned it up against Quinnipiac, which we'll get to in a minute. But good to see him. You know, listen, it's always interesting, I would say, in a second year, particularly in current basketball state. How's it going to be? What's it going to be like? 20 minutes off the bench. He was the lead guy off the bench, which is good to see. And I thought he did well with it. And it's great to see that he's still in the mix and not, you know, losing track with, obviously, you're bringing in guards and you're bringing in guys who could potentially steal minutes from him. But yeah. I was happy to see him play well.
He had an important week, and he's going to be an important piece of this team coming off the bench. Yeah. He did pretty good against Fordham. He made some shots, not three-pointers, but and then in the Quinnipiac game, made a lot of three-pointers. So he, you know, he is going to be an important piece of the team. He spaces the floor really well for us, which is extremely important.
When he gets energized, he really gets energized, and he can really go after a ball.
He can also excite the team.
I think he's a big locker room guy.
A real spark plug off the bench.
Speaking of second year jumps, I think we have to we can't not talk about Simeon Wilcher, who had a spectacular game against Fordham.
Absolutely.
Followed up by another spectacular game against Quinnipiac.
Pride of Plainfield.
I mean, you know, we obviously Davion Smith comes in and he's spectacular and that's great. And everyone said, oh, he's probably going to smart. But Simeon Wilcher had other ideas. And he did the most with it.
I mean, Simeon Wilcher is he's been a star. This week, and he looks like a different player. I mean, he looked good last year, don't get me wrong.
Oh, yeah, no.
But he looks like, I mean, he's just making shots at an insane level.
He's getting more time now.
He is.
He's ready. 17 points, 7 of 9, though. I think the 7 of 9 is even more impressive, right? I mean, right?
Very efficient,
and he got the points he needed. So the other game, obviously, we keep talking about is Quinnipiac, the other game we played this week. A bit more scary than the Fordham game. We did come away 96-73 with the victory, but we were losing. At halftime, we were down 39-35 at halftime, which was not great to see.
No, definitely don't want to see that.
Particularly in a game like this. I mean, obviously, you know, we talked last week, Quinnipiac picked to win their league. They're not a, their league is not a, you know, mid-major league even. It's one of the lower leagues. It's a one-bid league. But, you know, you hated. I was watching and it was scary at halftime, I would say.
We have a lot of bad memories to draw on. So it was nerve wracking for sure.
I think that's what it really is.
It's about us.
It's always in the back of your mind.
It's not about them. You always think
it could happen.
Well, of course.
We had another, like we said, struggled in the first half, but came on strong in the second. 45% from the field for us, 38% from three. We did out rebound them once again. This is really a game where you can see why this team is ranked 22.
We came out swinging after halftime. We went on a run really quickly. And then we played tight defense the entire second half. And then we just kept piling it on. We didn't have a lull like we really did.
Right.
We had like at the very beginning of the second half. We hit a three, and then we had like a two-minute gap where we didn't really score much. And then after that, we didn't not score for more than like, you know, maybe a minute the rest of the game. Where in past years, we would sometimes slow up on the gas a little bit, and we would go for 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 minutes where we don't score. We didn't have that this year.
Yeah.
We outscored them 61-34 in the second half.
It was a spectacular second half. It really was. Key piece on against Quinnipiac was RJ Lewis.
Absolutely.
Who had a spectacular game, 24 points, 13 rebounds. He didn't have a great game against Fordham. He fouled out.
Right.
He kicked the ball into his hands. Only scored 12 points. A lot of shooting. But against Quinnipiac, he seemed to have a tone for the first game, and he really had a spectacular game. As we talked about,
Wilcher also had a good game. There were four guys who scored double digit: Lewis, Wilcher, Smith, and Brady Dunlap. 20 points for him off the bench.
Absolutely scorching hot.
Five of seven from three, which is just phenomenal.
If he can do that every single game, we will be a top 10 team.
Oh, I mean, the thing about Dunlap is right now it looks like he's open. He's going to hit the shot, which is so necessary.
By the way, interesting starting lineup, I thought, in the Quinnipiac. We went a little small. We went Smith, Wilcher, Richmond, Lewis, and Ejiofor.
Yeah.
A little smaller. I mean, just we went to three guards is what we did.
Well, Pitino did talk about wanting to see that.
Well, I mean, these are the games to do it, right? Now the negative of that is, we started with a small lineup, and we played bad in the first half.
Right.
So the answer is maybe that's not the recipe for success.
Right. But, hey, you got to figure it out.
You got to try it now.
Well, that's why you play him.
Davon Smith had a great game, too, by the way.
He did.
Double-double, 13 points, 10 assists, 5 rebounds, 3 steals. He was literally doing a little bit of everything. And he kept finding Brady Dunlap for the wide-open threes. I mean,
he looks great out there passing the ball.
Absolutely. He looks great. There's a lot to like.
There's a lot to like. A lot of things.
A lot of praise go around because there is a lot of praise to happen.
Absolutely. That wrapped up a 2-0 week to start the 24-25 season for the St. John's Reb Storm. Got us a 22nd in the country. Now let's look at Spotlight Player of the Week. Craig, you went first last time. So Nick, you're going to be first this time.
Psych, man.
Who is your Spotlight Player of the Week?
I think I got to go with Brady Dunlap.
Fair.
I think he was lightning off the bench. He's the reason why we, you know, really pulled away in that second half in the Quinnipiac game. And he was just, you know, he was outstanding.
He really did show up to both games this week. Craig, who's your spotlight player of the week?
My spotlight player of the week this week is Simeon Wiltshire. He is turning into a superstar in front of our eyes, and it is amazing to see. He's averaging over 15 points this week, and really was just phenomenal. So I'm going to say Simeon Wiltshire.
I, too, am going to go with Simeon Wiltshire. Just to see, I knew Brady Dunlap could hit threes coming into this week. I didn't know exactly where Simeon Wiltshire would start off this season in terms of his level of play, and he started, you know, as high of expectations as possible. So that's why I'm going to vote for him. Tim's not here.
He voted for RJ Lewis.
He did. I was going to say.
He put in his mail-in ballot for RJ Lewis.
He made it. RJ Lewis didn't get any other votes. It's Simeon Wiltshire this week, the spotlight player of the week, week one. Good start of the season for him.
I'll keep a tally. Get him a tally.
Finally this year, Craig will finally do his job.
I believe when I see it.
That's Nick. I wouldn't hold my breath.
Because that went so well for you last season.
Yeah. Tell us, Craig. Tell us who won last year. Anyway. Now we're going to turn to our interview with new St. John's Athletic Director, Ed Cole. Ed, welcome on with us. We appreciate you joining us for the podcast.
Great to be on with you all. Excited to talk everything St. John's and excited for this season.
So how does it feel to come back to St. John's after finding such success at a program like Fordham?
It's really a kind of a wonderful full circle experience in terms of returning to St. John's. It's actually the third time I've worked here, and being an alum and growing up in Queens is extremely humbling and exciting and personal in terms of the opportunity and of the job and the challenge ahead and the ability to really plan and make change and be a change agent and impact things for the future. So I'm really feeling very lucky and excited. I love what I do. I'm blessed. I've always done a job that I enjoy. And for me to come back to St. John's, my alma mater, and my home borough, my town, is just, you know, really, really a wonderful experience for me right now.
So you were very successful at Fordham, doing record fundraising and really improving that program. What are some things you think you're going to try to implement or adapt from Fordham to St. John's as you kind of make this move?
Yeah, you know, in terms of Fordham and what it represents in New York City, you know, obviously strong academic institution, you know, strong, obviously, you know, alumni network here in the tri-state area, Catholic private institution, Jesuit, obviously we have an ascension here. So a little different, but a lot of similarities, honestly, you know, Vin, Craig, and Tim, in terms of first generation college graduates, a lot of, you know, local New York City, tri-state area kids who grew up in different parishes and, you know, obviously, you know, humble upbringings and had the opportunity to get an education similar to you and me in terms of St. John's and what that means. So a lot of the audience, a lot of the alumni network, a lot of the alumni base is similar that way in terms of a mission-based, prideful education and developing young people and giving them a chance that maybe, you know, they didn't financially, you know, have thrown at them. So when I took over at Fordham, you know, a lot of folks, like, you know, bad history of basketball, not a lot of winning, a lot of feedback where there's no way you can win here at basketball. I know the challenges of that and the importance of basketball in New York City. And, you know, really the process was, of course, hiring a good coach, hiring obviously a staff that understood not only how to win at basketball and recruit, but what it looked like and understood what Fordham University was. We were able to do that quickly, get some good energy, get some good enthusiasm, get a whole new vibe of culture and excitement, and kind of repositioning the brand and the look of what Fordham was about. And trying to really engage our alumni group, especially from a fundraising standpoint, and showing them the opportunity of what their dollars and their investment could do for the program. And honestly, really was energizing the campus. So, you know, the student body really got us going. Yes, they, you know, we won 25 games 2 years ago, but a lot of that was the student section and their passion, enthusiasm. It's funny. It's not only is it contagious with students. So we were able to get like 1,500 students a game, almost 2,000 students a game. But even the alums, they come back and they see that energy from the student body.
Right.
It's contagious. It reminds them of what they loved about their experience. Like a lot of folks at St. John's talk about 1985. You all know what that's about. at Fordham, it went even deeper. It was 1971 with Digger Phelps and and that team. So everybody connects to their glory of their experience at college. So, but it ties to them being students or being young people like us coming, you know, parents bringing us to games, you know, even before we were college age. And I think that's the beauty of St. John's is it's a strong alumni base. But it's also a huge, huge, what they call Subway alums who just love the game, went to the Garden, went to, you know, obviously love Big East basketball for everything that it's amazing for. And that's where I think the opportunity gets even larger for St. John's. It in essence is like a professional team that way, where you didn't have to go to the school or have to or graduate of it in order to be connected to it or enjoy, appreciate the value of high level, high quality Big East basketball. And I think that's what we have here now. So I want to try to focus a lot on the student body. I want to focus a lot about youth groups and getting the next generation of alums, you know, or young fans into the building. We have an age gap. You guys know that, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
No doubt about that. And how do we chip away at that? And at the same time of winning games with the Hall of Fame coach, also try to re-energize campus and hopefully continue to try to build some of the university priorities, whether that be enrollment, retention, school spirit, overall giving. I think really try to position men's basketball as the middle platform to help benefit all the issues and challenges that we have at the campus, but also to help all of our priorities around the New York City. So I think the lucky part here compared to Fordham, as you compare the two of them, I didn't have Rick Pitino when we started this process. I didn't have the recruiting group that we have when we started this process. I didn't have the NIL support. What's amazing what the NIL collectives have done here, all of them, in terms of getting behind this program and seeing it as an opportunity. And so some of that's already been done. So I guess I'm a little bit lucky in that standpoint of how do we then leverage that success, leverage those building blocks to better engage the campus, student body, the external groups, the alumni, to continue to come back. And that's been my message, if you've heard that a little bit, is just, I'm coming home. Right. I'm so excited to come home. I feel lucky to come home. Everybody needs to come home.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a huge alumni base. Like you said, there's a massive alumni base in New York City where there's a million St. John's alums are connected some way, has some family member here. I feel like everybody I talk to has some connection in some way. So getting them all back would be huge.
Craig, I think the challenge we have there is we have a huge alumni base, but there's almost a professional mentality.
Now, don't get absolutely.
Part of that is being beat down of losing or frustrations of losing. And I respect that. I'm a Jets fan, a Mets fan. Right? I expect that a lot.
No, well.
But unlike, you know, the Knicks, the Rangers, the Jets, the Mets, whatever it is, like, you know, most college towns don't have that fatigue because they are the only game in town, right? So, hopefully we're able to re-energize them, but also educate them on how important them being a season ticket holder is and not treating us like a professional team.
Right.
If you follow.
Yeah, I mean, that would be great. I mean, that is something we struggle with, right? It's the reason year after year we see games at the Garden filled with Villanova fans, not with St. John's fans, or filled with, unfortunately, the worst UConn fans and not St. John's fans.
Yeah, full transparency, and you guys know you're always going to get that from me, is we had that conversation, right? Look at the Villanova game, UConn game, probably sold out games at the Garden, right? We're pretty confident in that. But how do we make sure it's our fans, not their fans? Well, the answer is buy them and buy them now and buy them aggressively. Yeah. And even if you can't go, buy a block of tickets for your kids. Your kids' CYO team or their club or organization or your whatever you're part of, like, that's how you prevent that.
Yeah. You know? Don't sell your season tickets to those games. Yeah. You may get good money for it.
Listen, you guys are savvy sports fans, right? You grew up in the greatest city in the world here in terms of sports. You also know what takes place, especially when the team is not good. People will buy season tickets, and then they'll sell their desirable games to offset the expenses. Well, we can't have any of that stuff going on here. You got to be all in. All in on Coach Pitino, all in on the program, and at least give them to a family member who's going to wear red. Please give them to a client or a colleague that's going to wear blue.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. No, for sure. That's where that is something obviously we've struggled with for a while. So it would be great to see that turn under your tenure here. Had to be a little bittersweet for you to start the season against Fordham, though.
Yeah, really, really bittersweet. so definitely awkward. Even my kids like that. And I was too, because I know that staff. I know that fans, and they, obviously I wish them the best. I hope they have a great year in the A-10. I really do.
Sure,
is awesome. But it was weird. But I'll tell you. So obviously we did that agreement when I was on the other side of the table. We had done the Holiday Festival last year. You guys probably remember that.
Mm-hmm.
there is no Holiday Festival this year because we're doing the New Mexico game with Coach and his son, which is right. really, really cool. And
that'd
everybody
be very cool,
needs
yeah.
to be there on the 17th. No excuses. Massaware Garden, Tunnel for Towers, the best cause in all of New York City for all of us that have been impacted by 9/11 or had family members. Please, everybody show up for November 17th. But so they moved it like, oh, listen, the best we could do is the opener. And as if it was a bad thing, like the opener.
Right.
So on the flip side, you know, me and my former coach are like, well, maybe they won't be ready for the opener. Maybe they'll be a little
right.
Maybe you catch them sleeping on them. But obviously, we look good. We're definitely talented. St. John's, we're deep. Coach Patino has been an artist at watching him at practice. And he always asks me about what I think of certain players. I really try not to get involved in that. That's not my job as AD. But I've been blown away by the chemistry, the relationships. As you know, at the portal, it's a lot of new kids. It's a lot of new emotions, a lot of new locker room. And you don't have a lot of time to build that chemistry. I love what I see on that front in terms of their relationships, pulling for each other, the way they communicate in practice and on the floor. And again, that's kudos to, you know, the Hall of Fame coach and the staff we have and what we're building here.
Yeah. I mean, it looked after one game, they looked like they were in mid-season form in terms of connectedness and that kind of stuff, which was amazing to see. Because that's hard. Like you said, that's really hard to put together that quickly. So
something else you inherited as you came over was the kind of transition that Father Shanley and Coach Patino and Mike Craig had put in place in terms of redoing Tafner and Carnesecca. So I guess my question is kind of where does that stand as of today? And do you kind of just kind of hopping in and continuing the motion? Or are you going to make some changes yourself? Where do you see that project kind of going?
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of the excitement for me coming back, you already know, in terms of my love of this university, my love of the institution, and how personal it is for me. A lot of the excitement really was around Father Shanley and his leadership as being president of this university. I'm well-versed on what Providence has done. Obviously, whether it was Ed Cooley years, whether it was the practice facility they built there, the Dunk being a sold-out, hostile environment, their alumni base. I've done a lot of research on Providence and a lot of research on Villanova, especially as I was trying to build the Fordham basketball program. And those two really were key examples for me. Also Loyola Chicago. So I was really kind of into it. I'm like, wow. So I love that obviously there's plans to build the practice facility here. I thought that was great. But I also love that he had built a health and wellness center. I love that he had the courage and the guts to hire Rick Pitino and the commitment to basketball here and what that signified to all of us as fans, but all of us as an alumni base as well. And, you know, I think as I assess some things here, I definitely need to restructure and reorganize our department. You know, we're having house settlement conversations on revenue generation, revenue share. Talk about NIL, that's going to continue to grow. That ain't going away anytime. Sponsorship sales, not naming, ticket sales. You know, how do I kind of conform our department to be more of a revenue centric area? And we need to do that. So we have to repivot some things. I've said this, it's not just tongue in cheek a business. It's really a business now. And that ain't going away and that ain't changing. The NCAA is telling you that. If they can't salvage the March Madness tournament, then the NCAA has their own business model problems, right? So how do we make sure
Absolutely. We're
doing this here? And also that will benefit the rest of our Olympic sports in terms of that a true revenue pipeline and trying to find alternate ways of generating revenue. So we got to look at that. It's obviously hard to do that right in the middle of a season right now, but trying to assess that, trying to get those pieces together, a reorg, a restructure of our org chart, kind of a real strategic plan in terms of our direction on how this is going to move forward in the new world of college athletics. And I think, you know, it's understanding our history, which I guess I'm lucky to have some of that in terms of having worked here over 10 years in the last couple of decades. But also trying to really look to the future of, you know, my non-traditional AD background of working as an entrepreneur, working at Coca-Cola, working at the NFL and doing things like that allows me to, I'm kind of comfortable in the whole NIL idea, this whole pay-to-play space. But we need to figure out a little bit strategically how we're making sure that we're doing that appropriately, successfully, but that it's benefiting the rest of the university. You know, there's historically always athletics versus academics on many campuses, knocking down those walls. I want the dean of the business school to think that men's basketball is benefiting their business programs. I want the same for the law school. I want the same on our applications. So really trying to look at things a little bit more globally. How can we also collaborate resources throughout campus? you know, so how do we have events and utilize basketball, utilize our athletic program to have strategies, whether that be marketing, whether that be promotions, whether that be social, whether that be obviously utilizing again and being more collaborative that way. I think there'll be a lot of benefits there. So looking at everything in totality, definitely going to be a lot of change. We need to make change. I think change is healthy in terms of culture and morale. You know, I think, you know, there's definitely a means of trying to try new things. Are they all going to work? No. But I think there's a creativeness and a freshness that'll help us be a little bit more innovative and really make sure that we are looking at what the outcomes and goals are. And we're driving decisions by the metrics of numbers, whether that be dollars generated, whether that be alumni reached, whether that be youth kids brought on the campus, but making sure we are constantly looking at things from a perspective of how can we really justify and quantify success.
So one of the things you mentioned is, you know, the NCAA tournament trying to remain basically in existence. Obviously, there's constant realignment going on right now in college athletics. How do you see the Big East and St. John's kind of situated? And do you think leagues like the Big East that are basketball only are really viable going forward? Or are they going to, you know, essentially struggle because of the whole football conference issue?
Yeah, so great question. So, and I've had Big East meetings the last two days in the city. Again, really, really excited for the conference and our leadership and Val Ackerman. And I think there's a beauty of a bunch of schools in the Big East knowing who they are, what they are, and obviously a majority of them not having football. I know the UConn is always going to be a conversation here moving forward. And obviously we want to keep UConn in the conference hopefully as long as possible because from a basketball standpoint, they truly represent who we are and what the league is about. I think it is a little, unfortunately, a little disadvantage, you know, Vin. You know, this situation really obviously is about maintaining the Power Four and keeping them a part of the NCAA and keeping them part of March Madness. We know what's happened with the college football playoff series. You see what's going on there. They're already talking about it going from 12 now to, I read the other day, to 24.
And yeah.
You know this, the more playoff games, the more TV money, the more fan interest, and it's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out. But, you know, obviously the money has been heavily football. The house settlement obviously is a lot in response to football schools and football payouts. And but we can't control that. Obviously the Big East, you know, has not, you know, that is not who we are in terms of football commit, but how do we make ourselves the best, you know, basketball only members and institutions that are out there? And I think that's truly a commitment that we're trying to focus on. And I think they've done a good job, you know, as you know, between UConn and Villanova and not even just what they represent in national championships the last decade, but think about what the ACC is now going through, right? And it's, you know, it's not the Dukes and Carolinas in terms of college football. It's not, you know, Gonzaga and what they represent, and obviously on the West Coast. And, you know, there is a lot to be said of basketball only. And I'm actually in agreement, whether it be Val Ackerman or Brett Yarmark, that college basketball is undervalued. I think that March Madness is undervalued. That tournament is as special, as unique, as different as any sporting event in the world. And hopefully there's opportunity to continue to leverage the love of college basketball to the higher level that somehow football has right now and continue to, you know, use that as a revenue stream to improve, especially basketball only, you know, schools like us from a premier sports standpoint. But I think the Big East is got a good vision. I think they have a good footprint. Obviously they have Madison Square Garden. Obviously Fox Sports has been a wonderful partner and a generous partner. Hopefully that continues. And hopefully we really continue to find a way to leverage high quality college basketball that, you know, we know we're as good as anybody in the Power Four in terms of hoops. And it's just, we don't have football. So how do we creatively do that? And I think there's a lot of new opportunities to do that. I think the rev share is a good step in the right direction. I think NIL has been huge for a lot of those programs. And hopefully that continues to be our path and our avenue to leverage college basketball. You know, honestly, to the point of evening out to college football, hopefully suppressing them at some point.
We also, the Big East kind of knows who we are, and we're very, because we're basketball only, we're very focused on those things. We have a true identity. We really feel like a cohesive conference where a lot of the football ones are kind of just thrown together for convenience or money, and they don't really necessarily have those familiar ties that the Big East seems to have.
So obviously you were one of the first employees at Vitamin Water and were an integral part of their success. And then while you were working at St. John's, you helped bring in Under Armour and Body Armour as partners for St. John's. How do you use kind of that entrepreneur background that you talked about before and transition it to being athletic minded?
I think it's everything for me personally. I think it's everything to me in terms of creatively looking at things, in terms of how you engage an audience and a fan base, a customer base, how you energize a culture and environment where people work in. You know, yes, Vitamin Water is special in terms of it being a $4 billion company. And, you know, I think it created 119 millionaires or something amazing in terms of the financial payout for individuals who got behind a water company at a period of time when people weren't even buying bottled water. But the biggest takeaway I have there, whether it be from Micropoli or that company, was everybody was pulling in the same direction. Everybody had skin in the game. Everybody had shared ownership in the process. Everybody was a part of the success story and the windfall. You know, very, very lucky and fortunate. And I feel so lucky and fortunate to be a part of what that represented as a culture and environment where everybody was on the same page and everybody had shared ownership. So trying to create that almost an entrepreneurial spirit here in our athletics department at the university has been everything for me. I talk a lot about it being a startup company. I talk a lot about everybody kind of putting down the pillars and the DNA and the foundation of what's amazing for this organization, and everybody feeling that they have a voice, they have an opportunity to be part of building and making change and making suggestions and taking chances and taking risks and trying new ideas. That's the culture environment I love. And that's probably my biggest takeaway from Vitamin Water, is being in a culture where everybody feels like they are really part of the process, part of the ownership, and they truly are making impact. And honestly, that's the only way it works. I don't have all the answers. I don't have all the time in the world. I don't have all the money in the world in terms of how do we be creative? How do we get good, young, energetic views and perspectives and thoughts and ideas and bounce them off the wall and try different things? So that's truly excites me. And that's try the culture environment I'm trying to really create here and build here in terms of St. John's Athletics.
So, you know, we kind of have to ask, after the first game, obviously there was some congestion getting into the building. What's the plan to kind of alleviate that and, but still keep the vendors, you know, keep vendor options as open as they are? Obviously, Karnisek Arena is a tight space. There's nothing you can do about that. But how are we going to space it out so that people aren't, upset waiting in line?
Yeah. Listen, and obviously apologies for those that obviously had an interrupted experience there or challenging way to get in. I think, you know, the plaza has been a fun way to try to engage more people. Food trucks, the DJ, the 1870 alumni tent. I think there was a waffle truck. I think there was a taco truck. I think there's a hot dog stand. Trying to obviously engage our
kids. Yeah, no, it's great.
Yeah, and obviously moving everybody outside, try to remove congestion from the lobby. You know, kind of a first-time run-through, and I think we had some challenges with the metal detectors. So I know public safety takes that very seriously. 6:30 start, a little bit earlier than usual. I think everybody arrived at the same time. Monday rush hour parking. I'm not making excuses. We take full responsibility. It's who we are. But you know, I think we'll be better learning here from going forward. And then also students had to get there. They had to get their ticket through the ticket window, maybe come through, come out. So we're moving some locations there to make students tickets a little more accessible. And we'll keep chipping away at this, but we're not perfect, but we're going to continue to do different things. And I think it's important for the fan experience. And I promise you the next time it'll be better. And we're all about getting everybody back here and making it as easy as possible. And we'll continue to take your feedback and take your responses. But I love that we're taking chances. We're trying new things, we're taking risks. And I promise you we'll get it right here moving forward.
We want to thank Ed for joining the podcast. Obviously, brand new year for him. Excited to see which way he takes this program. And listen, great guy.
He really was.
And great vision. I mean, he did great things at Fordham. I'm excited to see what his tenure here brings and where he takes this university.
And he's a real St. John's guy. You can hear it when he talks. Like, he knows it. He loves it, too. And it's great. That's great. It matters to him.
You want somebody at the helm who's a fan. Right.
Yeah,
I mean, it, And he is. And he's a true, true fan. And that's great. I think that's going to result in great things.
Yeah. No, 100%.
All right. Well, we've got two more games this week to start the second week here. And the first one will be a local matchup against the Wagner Seahawks on Wednesday on FS2. That game's 6:30 at Carneseca, as we talked about with Ed Cole. 6:30 games, the absolute worst. Got to get those off the schedule, but Fox keeps doing it to us, so what can we do? 1-1 on the year. Their one loss came to 25th-ranked Rutgers Scarlet Knight, who we jumped, by the way, in the rankings. Shout out us. They stayed at 25. Their leading scorer is Jakir Sanchez. He leads the team, averaging 10 points, but the duo will actually have to watch out for more so. Is Ramir Moore and Keontae Lewis, who both average 9.5 points a game. They'll be the two offensive stars, if you will, or offensive leaders for the Seahawks. TJ Kelton is going to keep our guards busy on defense. He averages 7 assists per game, so he's going to be a guy who runs their offense. And listen, I mean, it's obviously it's Wagner. I mean, with all due respect, they lost to Rutgers by 20. They are 23rd in the nation in 3-point percentage, though. 44%.
We are going to have to protect against three.
We are going to have
three. Is a great equalizer.
Absolutely. And we've seen that before. We've seen that story too many times. Although
we left them a little open in Quinnipiac.
Wagner is 2-19 against St. John's all time. So I do like our chances. However, Rick Pitino, 1-3 against the Wagner
Seahawks. That's a very interesting stat.
That's very interesting.
Iona, they played him a bunch. They played him a bunch in Iona.
Yeah, but 1-3. Because Iona is a higher level team than Wagner. You wouldn't expect them to lose.
I don't disagree. Rick's had a rough go.
I'm surprised we only played Wagner, 21 times in our history?
I think they were D2 for a long time.
It must have been.
It must have been or something. Because
I think that only in the only recent, I think probably only in the 2000s did they become D1.
Then that would make sense.
I feel like we play them almost every year, to be honest.
I think we do. I think they're a younger team. I think that's really what more it has to do with. Because you're right. I mean, we play all the local teams. Although we haven't played Manhattan in a while. But
yeah.
We typically play the younger teams, the local teams. Yeah. You got to play bye games. Might as well play them close.
Yeah, I mean, no reason to travel super far. I guess we don't travel.
We're not going out to Staten Island. Oh, we have a campus. Could have played them out there.
Yeah.
Why don't you guys just come over to Staten Island campus?
The interesting thing I am looking for on Wednesday night is to see what happens with Vince and Zuby. Pitino talked about in his press conference how he's thinking about starting Vince just to see how Zuby reacts to it. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens there and if he does start Vince and how Zuby reacts to that. And I think, like I said before, I think Zuby will be fine. But actually, Vince was a nice surprise. And I think if he can play well, that'd be great for us.
Yeah, no, Zuby has struggled. So listen, sometimes people just need a little switch, right? Not starting, coming off the bench. We saw him come off the bench all year last year, and he was great when he came off the bench. So you never know. We'll see what happens. It'll be interesting to see that game again on Wednesday. You know, I like our chances, as Nick said. First real game of the year, if you will, comes on Sunday at Madison Square Garden, noon. Also on FS1, but don't watch on FS1. Go out to the Garden and watch Richard Pitino take on Rick Pitino as the New Mexico Lobos come to Madison Square Garden. New Mexico is a real – they won the Mountain West Championship last year. They're a real team. They just beat UCLA. Probably part of the reason we're ranked, to be honest. Shout out them.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
And they received some votes.
They did. They did receive some votes. They've got former Rick Pitino players.
From Iona, yeah.
From Iona. So it's – now, they've played before, but always – you know, I'm sure it's always an interesting week for Rich and Rick when they play each other. I'm sure it's a really tough week for the Pitino family.
And it's going to be tough for Thanksgiving. They're playing before Thanksgiving.
Yeah, that's right.
Make it interesting at the old dinner table there.
Make it a little awkward. Let's hope it's awkward for Rich and not Rick, okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because this is the first real test, and this starts a string of very strong non-conference games for us. We play from New Mexico. Obviously, we go to the Baja Mar tournament where we will play Baylor. Then we'll either play Tennessee, Virginia, then to Georgia, still in the Bahamas, but we'll play against Georgia. We'll then play Harvard and then Kansas State. So we've got a real stretch here where we could do some damage, by the way.
We can move very high up the rankings.
That's it. We're starting at 22. We can move up very far if we successfully navigate this next stretch. Right. But it starts with the Lobos. And again, we talked about, you know, Mountain West champions last year. They're a legit team. They're 2-0 on the year. They got a matchup before us, but it's a fluff game for them. They beat Nichols 91-84. That's seemingly a close game a bit. And then they beat UCLA handily 72-64. That game, even though the score was a little close, New Mexico was in control of that game the whole time. They played really well. Their two stars, Donovan Dent and Nelly Jr. Joseph, they both Iona transfers, went from Rick to Rich.
Getting a revenge game now.
Exactly. Both all Mountain West first team. So they've got real talent out there. They're returning 8 players from last season as well. The Dent and Joseph, the two starters, they returned. So this is a team with experience. This is a team that's been there. And Rich has done a great job. 27-1 over the last 3 years in non-conference.
Wow.
They have the highest winning percentage over that. Their second highest winning percentage over that time. The only people ahead of them is Purdue.
Wow.
Yeah. That's very interesting. No, I mean, it's going to be a very important game. It's going to be a real test for us. We'll put that 22 ranking on the line there and really see what we got going on.
The good news is a win, I think, will propel us forward more.
I agree.
We have a chance to go into that Baja Mar game against Baylor.
Top 20.
15. Top 15, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, it's early, so there's a lot of movement.
New Mexico's getting a lot of votes. You're getting votes, like Craig said, it's early on, right? A loss by a team, somewhere between 15 and 20 probably knocks them behind us. So it's just a matter of season. Later on, that wouldn't necessarily be true. I think there's a shot.
I think we can get up to 20. I don't know about 15.
Right. Well, look, we could be in the top 20, which would be amazing. Yeah, yeah. Right. I agree with you. It's going to be important. We got to pack the garden.
Like, got to pack the garden, like Ed said when we interviewed him.
Got to be loud. Make sure they know who we are.
Absolutely. Fill it out. A loud Madison Square Garden is an intimidating scene. It's a great scene for St. John's. And yeah, listen, we're ranked for the first time since 2019. This is a team that's legit. This is a team that we were hoping we'd kind of have last year. That I think, we had a bit of a disappointment last year when we lost to Michigan at the Garden.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's pack this one. Let's win this one. Yeah. And let's start what is hopefully a great run in the rest of the non-conference.
Let's hope this is the season we've been waiting for. Right? Let's act like it is.
Fingers
crossed.
You know
what I mean? And let's believe. And let's get out there and let's...
We always believe.
We always believe.
Yeah. I think that may be the problem. The Kool-Aid is always so good.
As they say in Ted Lasso, it's the hope that kills you.
The St. John's Kool-Aid is never not bad.
That's true.
It's the sweetest of the Kool-Aid in all the world.
Has been all my life. All right. Well, that'll do it for this week. For Craig and Nick, I'm Vincent. Go Johnnies. Keep chasing.